just hardly made it. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Yeah. I know you've been looking forward to the rec meeting all month long, so now it is finally here and you get to enjoy your evening. I am going to go ahead and flout the agenda as we start. We will approve the agenda once we have a quorum. I imagine we'll have a couple more people showing up shortly. But in the meantime, we will just jump directly into a conversation with the general manager. And you may note that we have both a conversation with the general manager and with station manager staff. So I know that that will possibly be a very lively conversation. No offense, that might even be livelier than the conversation with you.
Okay.
So we will aim for trying to switch over at 6:50. So keep an eye on the time as you think about any questions you want to ask or any follow-up questions that you feel the need to ask. And go ahead, General Manager Wiedefeld, if there's anything you want to start by saying to us, and then I'm sure that we will have things to say back.
Sure. Well, thank you. First and foremost, I want to thank you for participating and helping us. I thought I'd just give you just a real quick synopsis of sort of where we've been probably since the last time we spoke. Since I was here, obviously my priorities continue to be, you know, safety, service reliability, and fiscal management, and we've done quite a bit. You know, Safe Track's now coming to an end, so that's a very good thing. Service reliability, we've increased the production of the 7000 series. We're getting more and more of those out into the system, so that's a very good positive. And we'll get them into the Silver Line in June, so another good move. On the fiscal management side, again, we continue to focus on accountability and cost reductions and capital program delivery. And so we've been moving along in a number of areas there. Recently, you know, we're transitioning, we're moving out of, you know, I've been here almost 18 months now. We're transitioning now to sort of the triage mode and the learning mode for me personally to more of the sort of progressive and proactive mode. And so that's reflected in the Back to Good initiative, where we're focusing much more on the day-to-day experience of the rider and obviously continuing to do all the safety things like that. But we're moving that. And then clearly we went through a very difficult fiscal year 18 budget discussion, both with the board and regionally and internally, and had to do some drastic things across the board that impacted our employees and our riders and the local taxpayers at the end of the day. We also just recently in April, we laid out a plan where we started to look out into the future and just recognizing what we went through in 18 and what we see coming in the future and the need to start to address the core issues of the capital program and the operating program. On the capital side, it's in effect, we have a four-year-old system that we're just catching up with, but it's aging around us, and there's major investments that need to be made, and we, you know, we cannot push this off any longer, and that's why I proposed a dedicated source of funds to do that. We need to continue federal aid as well with the PREA funding. And on the operating side, we need to start to address, I believe, sort of the structural issues that drive the out years operating costs slow being so great. We're at a stage now where our operating costs are double what we're getting in revenues, and that just progressively gets worse as some of these things compound over the future. So I have put out a plan that sort of addresses those for consideration by the board and in the region. I've been meeting around the region discussing it at different boards and different venues, and we'll be doing that probably over the summer, most of the summer, just to get feedback. And I think this thing will evolve as we go forward. There's other players out there. The Washington Council of Governments has come out with a proposal. The Federal City Council, Virginia has Secretary Ray LaHood doing their work. So there's a lot going on around, I think, basically the same core issues is, you know, we all recognize the value of the system, and we need to start to address some of these larger issues that we've been talking about for years. But it's almost gotten to the point where we cannot talk about it anymore. We have to act. So with that, I'd be glad to take any questions or observations that you might have.
Great. Thank you so much for the update. I took a look at the Back to Good reports and the results of SafeTrack, and you know, seen welcome improvements in service reliability and on-time performance. But I wonder if you've been able to dig into that data to see if there have been noticeable improvements along the segments that were actually worked on during SafeTrack.
I don't have the data specifically on my fingertips, but I can tell you both anecdotally some of the things I've heard, literally, and some of the been going around the around the region, particularly in Virginia, and people said to me, it's a much smoother ride. I mean, physically, you can even see, you know, the difference. So just that, unfortunately, there's not going to be a big change except for that, and hopefully, you know, the idea is that we're getting ahead of things, so we're not reacting to issues that pop up. So I think over time, that will show a reduction in delays caused by rail issues, and so that's the key. And I think we are starting to see that. I know we're starting to see it. And but I think just for the rider, I think just get beyond that and not have to worry about that, I think is important. For me personally, I know I'm sleeping better, knowing that work is done, knowing the conditions that some of that stuff was in. And I think you saw the stats from 22% down to 2%. You know, those things are huge. Getting the gauge rods out of that. You know, all those things are things that worked on a lot of us that we had to get to. So I'm very pleased that has been done.
Thanks again for being here. It's a known fact that the bus drivers miss stops continually, which can create a hardship for the rider and not necessary. Which department would that fall under to address that issue? Would it be customer service or bus operations or the two of them in conjunction with
each
other?
Bus operations.
And then with the follow-up to that, I have a lot of customer service and operations experience. Mm-hmm. And now I'm a field mouse. I'm out there, boots on the ground. Would it be possible for me to meet with some WMATA staff about that? Because I have put inquiries in. Other people have. We've been putting things. We're just not getting any response. But I'd say every fourth time I'm on the bus, a driver misses a stop or two or leapfrogs. So it just seems like it's getting worse, and it seems like a problem that wouldn't cost a lot of money to fix. So would there be a way that, you know, we could work with your staff to see how we can, you know, find where the problems are originating and how to solve them?
Of course. I think I'll follow up with Mr. Bob Potts. I don't know if you've met him, but he runs the bus operations. And he gets he gets on these things very quickly for me. So let's make that connection. And if there's something, you know, ongoing we can do. Again, a lot of it is another set of eyes reporting is good. We can get supervisors out there. There may be issues that we're demanding too much from the bus operators. You know, we're not giving them the right resources.
Right.
You know, so there's things like that we got to address. So the more we know, the better to address them.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Last month, we had a gentleman here, I believe he was from one of the unions, and he was talking about the 7,000 series cars being substantially heavier and causing damage or excessive wear in some of the stations, and he mentioned Petworth. Can you tell me some of the impacts of the 7,000 car series? What's happening?
Sure. They are slightly heavier, about 2,000 pounds per car. So I think it's a relative number. So you know, you can imagine a fully packed six pack versus a lightly packed 8,000 or 7,000 series. That's actually heavier. So, but there are some issues there that we're working through. We actually have an independent group that has actually worked with the community. I believe we needed six of, in effect, volunteers from the community for us to set up equipment to monitor issues that, you know, that we've heard about. So that's in the process. That's underway right now. I think we've just gotten to the six. We would have reached out to a number of people to do that. So we'll see where that leads us. We continue to work on the issues with the 7,000. I mean, with any new major equipment like this, you are going to have issues, just like you have sometimes with cars coming off the line and sometimes planes coming off the line. So we'll continue to do that. But the performance of that vehicle has been very good in terms of, you know, outperforming the rest of the fleet. So that's good. But there will be things that we got to work through. And clearly, this is one concern we have to get to the bottom of. So I don't have an answer yet for you, but we have gotten an outside group that, you know, is this is what they do. Okay.
Oh, thank you. Hi, Paul.
How are you, sir?
Mr. General Manager. Yes, I was wondering about terrorist activity and criminal activity, things of that nature, with the terrorist attacks in the United Kingdom and in Europe in general and throughout the world. Safety is a huge concern, and I went to a IBM government analytics forum this past week, and they were talking, one of the presenters was the director of IARPA within the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. The intelligence, I wrote it down, Advanced Research Projects Activity, and he was talking about deep intermodal video analytics, or DIVA, that automatically detects suspicious activity through the use of live feed video. I was wondering, what partnerships does WMATA currently have to kind of, you know, make the best use out of private sector or public sector technology to make Metro safe and, I don't know, fun? Things like
sure.
that.
Sure. I mean, let me just talk a little bit larger about the issue first, and I'll try to answer your specific question. You know, we are constantly in contact, obviously, with the Joint Terrorism Task Force, which we have a very good relationship with. When these events occur, just so you understand, around the globe, we are plugged into other networks of literally from law enforcement from around the globe, and also in the transit. So even when these events occur, when they're not specific to transit, there's some connection or potential connection that we're looking at. So they may not have physically occurred in a rail station, but the proximity, all those things we look at. And they're also being used, just like our system is used sometimes as the sort of the forensic tool. You can follow people sometimes, you know, that went through our system, and, you know, if we find out, you know, something that happened. So just so you know, those things just don't happen. We just read about them in the paper. There's much more of a dialogue on that. And there's a network within the whole U.S. that does the same thing. In terms of working with public and private, you know, entities on these things, we have, there's some things we've looked at. I know we did some up at, we've been working with TSA, for instance, and private people, where to monitor anything that's left on platforms, for instance, that hasn't moved in a while. And we had this at BWI, for instance, where it would zone in on the baggage, and then you would, you know, determine whether it was something that had to be dealt with. So we continue to do a lot of those things. I'm not going to talk about a lot of them, but there are things, everything from facial recognition. So you can, you know, if you have a person of interest that you're looking for, and you have cameras that are constantly rolling, do they pick that up? And you do things. There's all kinds of things like that, and you've probably heard about some of them. So we will continue to do that. But again, I'm not going to get into the specifics of those things.
You had mentioned earlier that we're kind of transitioning from triage mode, or we can be a little bit more proactive now, hopefully, or at least getting closer to that point.
Sure.
One of the areas of opportunity I see is, as far as a proactive mode, is in terms of like customer service. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's one way, place where we could maybe help the ridership situation. I was curious what your thoughts were as far as the current state of the customer service that's being provided to the riders, and what maybe we could do, and what maybe we could do as a committee for initiatives to help in that direction.
Sure. I think some of it is technology and some of it's human. So from a technology standpoint, I think getting some of these older vehicles on the rail side out of the system will be good, because then we start communicating better with our, you know, with the announcements and things like that, because it knocks down some of those obstacles that we've had. So just one example. In terms of you know, we are working very closely with our bus operators. They have a very tough job. If you can imagine yourself, you know, going through some of the communities we go through and dealing with, you know, some of the issues they have to deal with day in, day out, minute by minute, you know, and some of the, you know, the things that, that you might experience on the street, they're experiencing constantly. And it's tough. I mean, so we try to work with them to understand, you know, to understand that, to sort of coach them and train them to deal with that, because it's just a reality of their work environment. You know, it's not going into an office and sit down at a desk. It's not. So they're dealing with some of the social ills that come onto the bus, for instance. So that's one area. And so if someone's not experienced, doesn't have those, and gets on the bus, and they're, you know, like, why am I being treated this way? You know, there's, we have to work on that with the bus operators to understand that everyone has those issues, even though they may have experienced some issues and some of that experience. On the rail side, particularly station managers, and I know you have, you know, you're going to have that discussion. My general sense is that station managers and rail operators are actually very courteous and friendly and customer service oriented. If we tend to focus on the ones, all of us, the ones that don't perform. But the reality is I go through the system constantly, and I see people, and they're helping people, and they're communicating with people. And, I'm hearing operators talk about what's coming, you know, and providing information. Is it 100%? No way, by no means. So we got to continue to work on that. I think there's also a bit of a culture that's developed, particularly the last few years, where people feel a little bit of put upon, our employees do. You know, it's they get up every morning and read the paper and hear the stories. And you know, these are very proud people. They've worked very hard. And I think that that impacts them too. So I'm trying to come at it from that perspective with my employees. So we also are looking at outside resources for training. We are working, for instance, with potentially Southwest Airlines and JetBlue, for instance, on some things, and then there's some other ones we're trying to get to some outside even the transit industry perspective. How do these firms deal with, you know, they deal with very similar issues in a lot of cases. So we'll continue to do that. I don't think we'll probably get to 100%, but we continue to do that, and I will continue to basically try to demand it. Okay. Mm-hmm.
You had mentioned kind of moving on from SafeTrack and wanting to improve kind of the day-to-day experience of the riders.
Sure.
In light of recent news about indecent exposure on the Metro system, there's kind of been a resurgence of a discussion about sexual harassment also within the Metro system. And I had noticed that in the last survey that was conducted, one in five riders had reported that was surveyed that they had experienced as sexual harassment and even sexual assault. Is even a big issue as well. So I was just wondering what WMATA is doing to kind of curb that. And I know that there's a public service campaign and public announcement, but what systematically are you looking at, and are you concerned by that number? And
I am. I mean, I think we reflect, unfortunately, society. society. I don't think it's anything unique to our system. You know, I think you can have those same issues, walking along, H Street. But we have to do what we can do. And I think we have reached out quite a bit to different groups that are professionals in this arena, as you may know, to help us understand that. We have asked people to let us know immediately. Unfortunately, in this most recent incident, we cannot bar people from the system. The courts have to do that. So when we know we have an issue, we literally cannot, unless the courts do something, you know, it's an open system. What you have seen, not only in that case, but really almost any crime that's happening on the system, particularly the rail system, with the new video system that we have in place, we are catching people literally in 24 or 48 hours. So we want to continue to, you know, inform people like that, or inform the community that it does occur, hopefully to curb some of that. Some of the things we're even doing with the fair, you know, the fair evasion issue, you know, part of that thinking is it's not only the money part of it, which is clearly, we should all be concerned about that, But it also starts to set a culture of what, you know, how you, you know, use the system where, you know, you just feel like, oh, I can do anything. And we're trying to say, no, you can't. You know, there's rules, and we expect you to abide by them. It starts at the fair gates and plays through the whole system. So that's, you know, I think it's, you know, we will continue to push as hard as we can on it. We're definitely focused on it. I mean, we're proactively going after it. But I think it's similar to the customer service experience. I don't know if we'll ever eliminate it, but we will continue to push very hard on it.
All right, three more questions from those who have not asked them yet. We'll go with Bob, Rebecca, and Pat.
Just two questions. Two questions about what I think are somewhat big issues.
Yep.
First is how are the contract conversations going?
With the union?
Yeah.
They are going. Contract negotiations. No, well, actually, we had a very good meeting about a month ago, and we have another one coming up, and we continue to do that. I remain very positive, but negotiations are negotiations. So, and particularly given the stress that we're all under right now, I think is playing out there.
Second, what do you consider the impact is going to be on the system when the Silver Line extension opens, which is what, next year?
2020.
2020?
Yes.
Okay. Is that being pushed back?
No. 2020 is the Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority is, you know, building that project. But that's their current estimate. We're, you know, we're working very closely with them from the standpoint is when it's handed over to us that we're ready to go. But they're responsible for it, and they're still pushing for 2020.
Does that involve more staff?
Yes, it will require, everything. It'll require more police, require more track inspectors, more maintenance people, more operators, more custodians, you name it. So we will start to deal with that issue. We did not address it in 18 budget because it wasn't coming. But in 19 budget, you'll start to see that because literally you have to start to ramp up to get there. You have to get people. It takes quite a while to get police people, you know, recruited and trained, for instance. So we'll do that, and so that'll play out. It'll be probably a fall discussion. You'll start to see more on that as we get into the 19 budget.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for being here. Sure. This question has been touched on a little bit before. Security and safety concerns with regard to terrorist or criminal activities are on everyone's minds right now. But customer service and the way riders experience Metro, I would say, varies across demographics and populations. Knowing the history of the transit police's accusations of civil rights and police brutality against people of color, as well as the potential for enhanced police profiling with the Fare Evasion program. I mean, Fare Evasion is going to be low-income folks, and that's going to be possibly targeted for enhanced racial profiling. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that combination of how we can make populations feel safe and secure, but also enhance the trust and the relationship between riders who are coming from different backgrounds?
Sure, that's a good point. I mean, just on the fare evasion, we're not doing it by any type of profiling. It's literally, you know, the fare gates are there. And what we're focusing on initially is really the swing gates that we have. And over time, what we found is, you know, everybody and his brother is going through their swing gates. And it's not a particular part of society. It's everything from, you know, all kinds of people. People are flashing badges, people are doing all kinds of things. And so my position is that everyone going through the into the system should tap in, even our employees. Unless we are physically moving equipment that needs that, use that gate, we do not open the gates. Because I think that, again, it's almost, you know, it sets the culture like, okay, everyone goes through the fare gates to get into the system. Now, so that's what we're trying to do. So we're piloting the two stations just to see how that goes first. But then we're going to move to basically securing all those gates if we can. And we're going to do that, which I think then will drive that. And that's, again, I think that's fair across the board for everybody. So it's not a profiling issue at all. It's literally just a physical barrier. And everyone uses the same means to get beyond that physical barrier, no matter who you are. So it won't get into that issue of trying to do that. But in general, I think, you know, these are issues that, you know, I think our police force is, and I know the chief is very sensitive too. Obviously, it's a law enforcement issue across the country. So we monitor that and we reinforce what we're about. I think we have a very, we're fortunate that we do have such a diverse community, that some of the tensions maybe aren't as great as those that aren't as diverse or you know, not as broadly diverse, if you understand where I'm going. And so I think that's good. Our police force is very diverse, you know, when you look down the line of our police force. So that is something we train, and it's something law enforcement across the country is training more and more on. So we're doing that as well.
Thank you. Just a quick follow-up. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it is very much appreciated any efforts that you guys are making to ensure that while we're trying to make everyone safe, we're trying to make everyone secure as a rider as well.
Yeah, thank you.
And last but certainly not least, Pat.
Thank you. It's good to see you again,
Hi,
sir.
Patrick.
A couple of things I want to talk about accessibility. Mm-hmm. I think that we have made and a few thank yous. We've made some very good strides in lots of areas. Concerning the last topic, the conditionally eligible individuals who use Metro Access that can ride the system for free used to go through the fair, that gate. Now with the cards that have been extended to those folks, we go through the regular fare gates and get counted. So that really has been good, and as well as it tracks PCA. So that has been a very good improvement, very well received by the disability community. The lighting project is something that you have supported. My committee, and I think everybody, appreciates that work that's going on. It's very well done. And then also the work that's being done with respect to the bus stops, bus stop accessibility that's being built in, the emphasis that's being put on the jurisdictions to make sure that we have accessible bus stops really does help the fixed route service. And then lastly, an area that I think is important for us to be focused on is if you're a person with a disability and you have the ability to use the fixed route service, that the default position for Metro Access should be to try to get that person trained to use the fixed route service, making as many people conditionally eligible to use the fixed route service, and then letting them use the Metro Access, letting them use Metro Access as they can, as they, you know, and that cuts down on a $50 ride for Metro Access. I think it's $50 to $5. A couple of areas that we will be, that my committee will be working on this year. We'll be dealing with the new Metro Access vehicles that are being purchased. We certainly will make sure that we get feedback with respect to that. We're looking forward to the ability to ride, particularly in Maryland, to see how that comes out. And any new contract that we have with Metro Access, I know we just had a conference, a pre-conference, bid conference a couple weeks ago. We're interested in what happens with that. The drivers get paid a fair wage, that productivity keeps ticking up as far as that is concerned. It's an area that we're concerned in, but we certainly want to work in a partnership, as you are aware, with WMATA staff and yourself to make sure that all of these systems work effectively throughout the system for people with disabilities and things like riding and bus stop, lighting and bus stops for people, for all the passengers. So thank you for the work you've done, particularly with the disability community, and keep us busy. We appreciate
that. Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you very much for coming to talk to us. We really appreciate you coming on a fairly regular basis and being willing to answer any question we throw at you.
Good. Well, thank you. If I could, just one ask. If you could, I'm sure that you have read, you know, the financial, you know, the plan that I put out. If there's further questions, if you need, you know, more information about it, I'd be glad to give it, you know, or have other people, you know, present it to you, finance people, whoever. But I do think it's important that everyone, you know, weigh in. I really do. And because it's going to be a very, very heavy lift, but I think the the risks are too great not to do something. So I think all of us have to force that discussion. So in the different roles that you play, if you can do that, I think, and, you know, we may decide not to do anything, but I think that it, to not discuss it, I think, is a disservice, you know, to the system and to the community. So I think that is a role that I think this committee can play, and individually the members can play. So anything you can do that, I think, would be appreciated. And if you agree with everything I put out there, that is even appreciated even more. So thank you so much.
Thank you for coming. We're glad you're sleeping better.
Okay, thank you.
Have a wonderful evening.
All right, thank you so much.
We will now switch over to a discussion about station managers.
Good evening.
Good evening. I don't know if you have something you want to start by saying, or if you want us to dive right into any questions we have.
Rail transportation training instructor at the conference center facility. And privilege about speaking with you today by way of our director, Paul Bunbury, and our senior supervisor, Ms. Craig Johnson. Appreciate the privilege of actually coming out. I just wanted to touch base and kind of expand upon what we do. I heard the echo as far as customer service. That's really a big issue here, and the communication piece. We've had the opportunity to actually focus and put a lot of emphasis on customer service. We had an opportunity to do a brand new curriculum that actually took place in the latter part of 2016. And as far as the station managers, they have five modules. The first, which is the emphasis on customer service, is our very first module. The importance of customer service, what is customer service? The importance of good customer service, the rewards of actually portraying customer service to our many internal as well as external customers. Combination of people skills. So important in terms of when you deal with customers on a daily basis. You know, so often we'll get smacked in the face with so many things at one time. It's called a station manager. I had the privilege of actually being a station manager myself over 5 years. And I took a lot of pride. You know, so I'm glad to get an opportunity, be in a position now to have the opportunity to pass on some of the skills that I've actually had an opportunity to learn, acquire, and perfect. Most of the things are perfection, but I must say, in terms of taking pride. So as far as the customer service piece, that's our big push that we've actually put a lot of emphasis on. As far as the second module that we've actually incorporated, we put in a procedures and reports, and that's a compilation of actually knowing exactly what the procedures are, when you have any type of conversation, knowing how to properly fill out the reports in terms of any situation that may have transpired within the station itself. And not just within the station, but of course within the surrounding area as well. Okay. We move into our third module, which is the kiosk and station familiarization. And that's a combination of actually the fare vendors, smart trip, sales, rechargeable machines. Of course, you know, no more heartache and headache as far as the paper fare cards. So there's a smart trip card earlier this time with dealing with the fare media, the fare gates, which we have problems with at times. In addition to that, just the setup of the overall operations of the station itself, as far as the kiosk and station organization. We move into incidents and reports. When we talk about, I heard the echo as far as the communication piece with regard to certain things being passed on in a timely fashion. And we perhaps may have some type of train delay. We may have signal tracking. And it may come at an inopportune time where as though it hasn't fully been passed on to the staff in a timely fashion, you know, to the point we can actually relate that to the customer. So that's so important that we are continually actually working towards building that communication with our fellow staff, particularly central control, you know, to give us exactly what's going on within the system so we can actually accommodate our customers in a much better way. And lastly, when you talk about the communication piece as far as our fifth module, that's our radio communications, and it actually entails a combination of radio communication, properly using radio communication as well as the proper usage as we come across the radio itself to relate that to various departments, but particularly central control. Okay, so, and again, I heard the echo as far as customer service and communication, so that's our sole purpose in terms of how we actually had an opportunity to read the curriculum. And biggest thing is when you come across, in my opinion, the best transportation system in the world. You know, we certainly want to leave an everlasting impression that means so much to us. You know, because we encounter folks from all over. And again, we know how bad news travels. You know, so my concern is in the event, you know, when you do experience any type of hiccup in the system or anything like that, we certainly do want to know about it, you know, because we do care. And we will address, you know, particularly with regard to customer service, appeasing the customer, and actually coming across to the point where we're going to actually enhance your experience. So I just want to start off actually by sharing that with you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to start with Bob. Well, your name tag is up, and I figured you would be interested in this. But you get one question.
One question. Okay.
I'll ask you my one question. The last time we had someone from your department here, they told us that that during rush hours that the station managers are supposed to be out of their kiosk.
Yes.
The two stations that I get on or off or use, I would say that 80 to 90% of the time during those rush hours, the station manager is in the kiosk. And if the weather's cold out or it's raining, it's 95 to 100% of the time. So my question is, I think I heard you say if there are any hiccups, you know, you want to know about it.
Absolutely.
So I would prefer not having to call the customer service hotline every time, you know, every time I discover that there's not a person outside of the kiosk. Is there a way we can short circuit that? Is there somebody in your department that we can call?
Well, actually, you called me directly. But in terms of some of the ways you can actually address that. We had in the station first, we had the take one rack.
Yeah.
Okay, outside the take one rack, we actually had a comic car. That's first performance. Okay. That's one way, of course, you mentioned the customer service. In addition to that, in terms of the getting the message to us via email, well, of course, no customer service. Yes, anytime there's any type of situation, actually, first of all, I want to apologize because that is the policy in terms of doing our peak period rush hours at AM and PM side. Yes, they ought to be outside the kiosk. And there may be times that you have to come in and actually make a call as far as maybe a piece of AFC equipment maybe malfunctioning. No bills, no change, no coins, no credit debit, no smartphone. Maybe the gates malfunctioning. Maybe the SBA doesn't have a service, you know, in terms of getting paid for that. But outside of that, in terms of the experience that you had, in terms of the station that you frequent, as far as entering and exiting, if it's consistent, obviously it's not being done the right way. You know, so we'll definitely readdress that again, and certainly emphasize the fact of how important it is to be outside of the kiosk, repeat periods, giving customer service.
Good. Well, I'll get your phone number and email before I leave.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I've already multiple calls to personally pass on everyone here.
Thank you for that.
Call
them. That is your one question.
Bob, put your placard down. First of all, thank you for everything you do, and thanks for coming to visit us today. It seems to me, you know, I've had many experiences similar to Bob's. I've also seen people make, you know, unreasonable demands of station managers. I'm probably guilty of it myself at times. But it seems to me that, you know, one of the major breakdowns in customer service, whether it be Metro or any other system, is a disconnect between the customer and the person delivering the customer service as to what the expectations and standards are. So I'm so glad to hear that you have this curriculum with all these modules wherein those procedures and standards and expectations are outlined. So I'm wondering if you can share that with us and make those standards, procedures, and expectations public so that everyone has a common understanding of what customer service should be in Metro.
Well, I can say this. In terms of sharing it publicly, certainly get back to you on that. And just to follow up in terms of the very first module that we discussed as far as customer service, In addition to that being our station's spring curriculum, we also have this called Station Manager Refreshment that we've actually incorporated, put back into force, which is so important. And so that actually takes place with our over 580 station managers as we speak. And again, the biggest concern that you all have, okay, as far as the council and the writers, has been just that customer service piece. And the breakdown as far as the miscommunication is. You know, so that's been, again, our focal point in terms of actually addressing it. So as far as making the public, I can certainly get back to you in that respect. This point, I'm not exactly sure. But, again, I can't say in terms of how important customer service is. It's not just a course. It's an ongoing conversation. And in addition to that, it's an ongoing act. The interim piece, that strong, it certainly affects the extra. You know, so we try to continue to make it strong in terms of driving it home, understanding it, what is it, how do we do it, what is it about?
Sawyer?
So my question is in relation to the current safety exercises and the quarterly ones. And I participated in the last one, and in speaking with the coordinator, Lauren, she had discussed how station managers are now going to be involved in those exercises, which is great. But I think you just mentioned there were 580 station managers and only four exercises a year. And so my question is there going to be kind of knowledge sharing with all the station managers after those events? Who's, like, selecting one person to participate in that event? How are you going to disseminate that language? But it seemed to me in the past that station managers, while they were there for the event, weren't actual players in the event. So knowing this kind of shift in who will be playing, is there going to be procedures in place for lessons learned and knowledge sharing across all the station managers by those who were able to participate?
Yes, great question. Because we, as training instructor, well, our training department actually takes place in these exercises. And what we've actually started to incorporate is, because we have a vast amount of the station managers, is we're actually putting together within the station manager refresher in terms of training them up. The biggest thing is with these exercises, you talk about emergency procedures, what's emergency, what to do, how to evacuate stations, locations of emergency exits. We need our AET fire intrusion panel to identify are we experiencing fire alarm and we experiencing an intrusion alarm. So yes, we have actually put in place as far as the compilation with our station manager refresher material when we bring the station managers back. And it may not be a strong 580 right now, because there's some retiring as we speak. But yes, that's a big part of how we're going to actually put it together. And it's really a true integral part in terms of us moving forward in managing our station. You can't manage a station if you don't know what to do with emergency comes. You can't manage a station. You can't manage a station if you don't have people skills. You can't manage a station if you truly don't know what customer service and communicating with customers. So yes, we actually have a consensus. And furthermore, we definitely want to move forward with that sooner than later, because it's all about safety. You know, as our GM said so often, Mr. Lee has all often said, safety trumps service. You know, we've been on customer service, but we've been on safety as well. Safety does trump service. So that's
Mick?
I had a question that I was going to ask, but listening to you talk, I got to say your enthusiasm and your passion are outstanding.
Yes.
And whatever you can do to instill that same level of passion in the rail operators so it's reflected in their attitudes and specifically with the way that they communicate with the passengers, yeah, I think that level of passion would serve the Metro system very well.
Communication is so important, you know, in terms of this, as we talk as a whole, the two things we're trying to do is, one, bridge the gap in terms of customer service with our customers that we deal with on a daily basis, and communication is, you know, so important, because again, if we can't get the information to you, we'll put you at a major disadvantage, and it makes people upset sometimes, you know, and again, so that's the biggest thing that we're driving home as response to customer service and communications.
Lorraine?
Good evening. I want to address the issue of overcrowding, because overcrowding not necessarily happens on emergency situations.
Correct.
It happens
anytime. Rush hour.
Exactly. Any rush hour. Yes. And the station that I most use the most is Pentagon City. Okay. And that one takes care of, I mean, you can get three metro bus routes and two ART buses routes that drop people in. So just one train that has to offload is enough to overcrowd those platforms so quickly. And my issue is that the platforms are not even stopped. The manager doesn't stop people from keep going down when this kind of situations happen. You've already had one that's already full, and a full train comes in, and they have to offload. That is really an accident waiting to happen. And it seems to me that this should be like a standard procedure. If a train has to offload, that you should stop those escalators so that people don't come down. Don't, you know, stop them at the mezzanine or something, because people keep coming down and there's no way to put them. There's nowhere to put them. And that is my only comment. I don't know what is the standard operating procedure, but as I say, just one bus that gets in, that's enough to, you know, put the strain on the platform. So.
Well, I'd love to respond to that, because, again, that actually is an emergency. That's one of our emergency procedures, which is crowd control, crowd prevention. And what we have in place are a number of steps to actually, we implement a number of steps in terms of what that station manager is trained. Instructed, facilitate, and he's trained to do a number of things. When we have a crowd condition, number one, we call central, we request state supervisor, and we request transit police. In addition to that, immediately we'll get on the microphone, we'll make the announcement in terms of safety, customers for your safety, please step back from the platform, spread all along the entire platform, use all train doors. In addition to that, there's three things we do with our equipment, okay? And obviously this is not happening. When you speak about escalators, in terms of folks, customers rather, continually coming to the station. That descending escalator, Pentagon City, okay, it's a side platform, trains running in the center, okay? That escalator on both track one side and the track two side are to be turned off as far as customers gaining access to the platform. Furthermore, when we talk, the second piece is not to see escalators, our fare gates. The fare gates, when you talk about our overcrowded platform, this is an extreme case. We have our fare gates placed on exit. So when you talk about flow, customer flow, in terms of customers still coming in and having where to go, that's to take place. And furthermore, in terms of our elevators ought to be placed in override, a combination of both. You talk about Pentagon City, we have an elevator on each side that you can gain access to the platform. They ought to be placed in override at the platform level. And then when we speak of the street elevator, that's to be placed in override as well. And placed at a certain level only for persons with disabilities. So we have everything in place. And we'll thank you for sharing that, because, again, a chronic condition can happen every day. And if it's an emergency situation that happens every day, it's not something that we don't use and lose. Chronic condition, sick customer, again, happen every day. When you talk about a person struck by a train or a person that fell on a train, maybe found smoke, we don't get that every day. You know, so again, we would definitely emphasize and put a lot more input in expressing how important it is when we talk about emergency procedures, but particularly the cabin condition. Thank you.
Yeah, my only issue is that sometimes it takes too long for the reaction, and by that time, the whole school
And especially the station that you mentioned in terms of Pentagon City, you have so much customer flow that comes through there. And then you're talking about a station of that magnitude, not only customer flow, but you're talking about a side platform, whereas the platforms are so narrow. And you have so often you have individuals that actually will, when they come into the station, they actually gather directly there at the escalator. It won't spread along the entire platform. So it makes it so much more difficult to gain space at that location.
Rebecca?
Thank you very much for your enthusiasm. I'm interested in communications regarding similar issues with sort of micro-emergencies that really affect people with mobility impairments and vulnerable seniors. So I always use the Gallery Place Metro Station, and I'm constantly worried about folks with mobility impairments and seniors who are getting knocked around because of overcrowding, and who are also encountering escalators that are out after they've already come multiple layers and then have to find out that that one level is not functioning and they have to navigate a set of stairs, or they cannot navigate a set of stairs. And I'm just wondering what old school methods of communication can be used for folks who are not looking at Twitter and online, but who are entering the station and may or may not pay, and then maybe they'll get the credit later if they have to exit. But what can the station manager and their staff do to communicate things timely so that people can have a good experience and not be prevented from accessing the service because of limited accessibility options?
Yeah. First of all, it's a tendency to take. And you're talking about, that's our hub. You're talking about Gallery Place. That's our hub. So again, we did have our platform monitors that were built at a Gallery Place, Metro Center. Some of the stations, yes, and they were very helpful there. Now what's happening is, unfortunately, they're no longer on the rail side. They moved to another avenue, and that avenue was actually receiving assisting station managers. The problem with that is, in terms of just the communication, if there's a breakdown in terms of when that assist comes, that assistant is not to be directly at the email. And I'm referring to a Gallery Place. You have the red line level as well as the green and yellow line level at Gallery Place. So what needs to happen now is when that assisting station manager comes, they own the station and manage the station just as if the original station manager does at the kiosk. So what's happened as far as in the system, there have been a number of emails that have come in. Since we've not had the platform monitors in terms of putting proper personnel in place, particularly for our ADA customers. For example, when we talk about the Gallery Place, we had the exit as far as the elevator, which is 7th Street, where the Dunkin' Donuts is. So there's no sweeping. So when a person with any type of disability comes through, if our two ADA gates, our emergency disabilities act gates are not working, what happens at that point? So that's why it's so important for us to have the proper personnel in place dealing with any situation like that that may occur, whether it's on that red line level or as well as the green yellow line.
Justin?
Thank you. Hi, Mr. Clifton. Your name is kind of far. Okay. Hi. Thank you so much for being here. It'd be great to have more people in your position here every month just to hear your perspectives. And obviously, you guys are in all the stations and buses, so we could go to where you are too. That's not too hard to ask either. I would also echo what Colin said about just transparency. They say sunlight's the best disinfectant and causes the most growth. So it'd be great if it can be open to the public so that we could kind of. This is one question about accountability, but also recognition. So the accountability piece, that transparency piece, we have a Facebook group page, facebook.com/WMATARAC, and we get maybe 1 to 4 messages every week, and so it's about a dozen, and it's getting kind of out of hand now, because I'm the only one answering them. But basically, I promised these two writers, one was about an escalator. She was on the escalator and her son almost fell off and down because it stopped abruptly. And so that's something that needs to be addressed. What was the procedure regarding that? What happens then? And also for bus drivers who just leave, like, passengers who are waiting at bus stops and just go without stopping for them, like, what can that rider do other than put, like, a customer complaint form or whatever? Like, what's, like, a tangible, immediate thing that he or she can do? And on the flip side, recognition. The program projects and planning committee that I chair, we are trying to begin crafting a Metro rider rewards and recognition program, but mainly the recognition piece is what we're trying to, like, do first. How can we recognize riders, but also station managers, employees? Like, what would be meaningful to you in terms of recognition and people and your peers? Like, how can we showcase your great work? I'm sure we always talk about how horrible things are all the time, but we want to value your contributions too, and we know that they're valuable, so how can we, you know, recognize that?
Well, first, when you speak of the situation with the escalator, it's a major inconvenience when the escalator actually goes out with someone on it, possibly into an emergency situation. So when that happens, immediate action is to be taken place by the station manager. Okay? And in terms of the process, first and foremost, check to make sure they're okay. And if there's been any kind of injury, obviously we'll assess the situation. Contact central for medical dispatch.
And does the station manager turn off the escalators, or who's responsible for the shutdown of the escalators?
Well, yeah, it depends on if an escalator has a Coleman pattern. You all may not be familiar with this term, but a Coleman pattern. Okay. So they have two pumps. So we'll immediately take that out of service. It'll use as a walker.
Okay.
If that escalator has any type of shock, body fluid, foreign smoke that they may be from, we'll immediately take it out of service. And we'll barricade.
So barricade, okay.
Yes, if it's body fluid, if it's foreign smoke, if it's shock, or if it's any type of hazardous condition, maybe a step that may be loose. Immediately, that station manager is to not only take it out of service, by turning it off, but also barricade that escalator.
Barricade it first and then turn it off, or turn it off and then barricade? Oh, turn off first.
Yes.
Okay. Once but making sure. Okay, great. Okay. That's a person. Okay.
And then at that point, we'll slowly barricade the escalator.
Okay, great.
But in terms of, you know, when you have the customers that are on the escalator itself, very delicate situation, and it's all about, as I mentioned before, attention to detail, and really having a sense of good service as far as the customer. Now, as far as the bus stop, okay, when certain customers are actually let off at a certain location. You know, we have in place what's called shuttle bus service, mm-hmm, which is either established or request. Give me a station on the top of your head. Just okay. We got Mass 22, Mass 23, dual kiosks. In the event at the Judiciary Square, we have the major side that has the elevator. That goes, if the elevator is out of service, if it just went out of service at 7:30, we'll call and we'll request shuttle service to the next stop. Okay, at that point, it'll be a Union Station or it'll be the Yonge place. Now, in the event it's going to be out for quite a while, it'll be put in place and it'll be established. Okay? Now, that communication needs to be put in place with a combination of both our station side and our bus side. So that station manager has a tendency to, if they do not know exactly what's in place, they'll contact Bus Central and find out exactly where the bus shuttle service is actually being established, the location. So if you take, for example, Metro Center, we have four kiosks, four different locations. That's an example where that station manager has to know the location, 11G in Metro Center, just to let you know, you folks that come through there, you need shuttle service. That the location of it is 11G. And again, if it is Judiciary Square, the location is if it's going to be on the 4th Street side or the opposite side. Okay. In terms of recognition, we love recognition. And it's one of those things that certainly needs to be addressed when you speak of the type of emails that you receive as far as your, or the messages, right? Messages that you receive. Facebook page. We want to know about that, you know, we want to be sure that we're doing what we're supposed to do. We have a passion over training, and we push this thing to work hard. And again, there may be some changes along the way when a station manager gets out there that's totally unacceptable. You know, so we have in place not just what I've mentioned. We also come out, we do performance audits, okay, throughout the entire system, all of our 91 stations, our 118 kiosks. And we do that on a consistent basis. Now, we can't say that we're going to come by and find anything negligent at that particular time, but if there is something negligent, it's definitely addressed. And, you know, we have a strong sense of awareness that it's going on, and a strong sense of awareness that we're moving.
Oh, but I'm talking about, like, recognition as in, like, positives. Like, what would, like, for station managers that, you know, do a lot of work and get down sometimes because customers are kind of very needy sometimes. Like, what would you like, or what would you think customers might like in terms of being recognized? Like, because when I heard you speak, it seemed like you're focusing on, like, the audits and, like, the making sure we're doing our jobs, but how can we, you know, recognize station managers or, you know, awards, bonuses, like what?
Yeah, that's a good part of morale as well, because, you know, morale is so important. If I were to sit here and speak for the authority as far as the station managers, what is that we would like? First and foremost, we like to do our jobs to the best of our ability.
Okay, I see.
That's first and foremost.
I'll skip
that. When you speak of some type of recognition, we've had in place the common cards where we actually receive commendations. Those accommodations, actually, we have a meeting every week that the 9 divisions within the rail system that actually have a conference call that they discuss the goods and the bads, and obviously the recognition that you're talking about as well. So those station managers that are doing their job, you know, hopefully that can filter into other stations as well. But in terms of the recognition piece, not to sound too frank, but this is what we signed up for. We signed up to give good customer service. We signed up with a job that we wear many hats, okay? And in addition to that, those many hats entail the emergency procedures, managing the station, and again, communicating with our customers, having people skills, dealing with difficult and angry customers, whether they're angry, abusive, aggressive. Sometimes they have a tendency to overboard, but again, you know, this is exactly what we signed up for. So. Recognition is a great thing.
Not for recognition's sake, but to, like, improve performance through that. But definitely. Okay, awesome. Awesome. Okay, thanks.
Nope, no also. Okay. Awesome. That's okay. And as our cleanup hitter, once again, we will have Pat.
Okay, all right, thank you. We're adding cleanup tonight. People with disabilities, a particular class that we haven't, I think, in general, haven't done a good job of communicating with. The deaf community, we have instituted, I think, over the 2 months ago, where they have instituted whiteboards within the rail stations so that the rail station managers can communicate with folks who are deaf. Of course, they can't hear the announcements, and there may not be a lot of information coming through that they can see in the stations. The other important thing about the whiteboards is it's two-way communication. And so that's absolutely critical for the deaf community. Anecdotally, I don't know that that has been in widespread use. I know it's only been around for 2 or 3 months. But I think it would be something that would be very important for you to get in touch with the Office of ADA Programs, talk to them about the usage, how the usage can be increased, and so we can see more of that for the deaf community within the system. Anecdotally, I've heard that it hasn't been too widespread, but I'd like to see if we can get maybe an education program out there, or let's get something, talk to the ADAP, let's see if we can get the usage of the whiteboards for the deaf community out there. And then in general with communications, anytime we're developing a communication system, you've got folks that, of course, deaf community, you've got the blind community, you have the deaf-blind community. So we have to think strategically when we're putting our systems together so that you have a multiple ways of communicating with people, because the disability community is transit dependent and many of them rely on the system, so that as much communication access and customer access that we can provide those folks, the better that community will be served.
Yeah, can I respond to
that? Sure. Thank you.
That is definitely going to be addressed. We have that as far as in the parking lot right now with our senior supervisor, Mr. Craig Johnson, and again, he's taking notes. So everything that we discussed. But in terms of that, making the system more reliable, we're going to be more accountable in terms of making sure that anyone that has a disability is going to be treated fairly, not treated differently, and treated just like everyone else. And that's so important. And so, and yes,
very good.
Will be addressed. And as a matter of fact, this is my very first time as far as the RAC meeting, so it's a privilege being here. What we will do is we'll definitely have a follow-up in terms of what we've actually put, the information that we've actually found out. See how we made it more accommodating for you, specifically the white ones.
And we do have one more question for you, a cleanup hitter, if that's a term. I might have made that up.
Mr. Clifton, thank you for coming, by the way, and I apologize for my tardiness. I do take care of some work-related issues. But I do have a question. Sometimes station managers have to be taken away from the booth to help customers or for emergency, whatever. Is there like a be right back sign that they could put up? Because I've had people talk to me and say, Paul, there's no station manager within sight, and I don't know if they just, if they're going to be right back at all. So is there anything like that? It's a real small question.
That's
but
a great question. Yeah, we have our station managers that actually do a station inspection. In addition to that, they may take a personal restroom break. In terms of both, I like that. I like the idea in terms of whether it's a personal or whether it's a station inspection. That a sign like that would definitely help. Where that may not be as effective is when we do have that family of six around town at the machine, or that family of seven that don't know how to figure out the fare meter, and we've just simply stepped away from the kiosks. We're only the machine, and then in addition to that, we have someone with a disability that may need some assistance on an escalator, or we may be heading up at Woodley Park, 456-foot escalator, heading topside. And in that respect, a sign like that probably wouldn't be put out. But I do agree with that with regard to the personals and the station inspections. We definitely put something like that.
How long is the station?
Well, generally, it takes about 5 or 10 minutes for long events. And if you're talking about a station that may be like a Friendship Heights.
Yeah.
And the only reason I'm saying that is because you do have the dual size, which you have the Rotunda area, and as well as leading up to the bus bay, the Mazda Gallery side, the Chevy Chase Pavilion side, the parking lot side. And the reason I chose that is because when that station manager does lead out of the site of the immediate area of the mezzanine where the kiosk is. At that point, it may take a little longer. But generally about 5 or 10 minutes. And that's with regard to the mezzanine level, upper level, as well as the platform.
Thank you very much for spending a good piece of your evening with us.
Thank you.
I have no doubt that we will take full advantage of the cards that you are crazy enough to leave behind. And Bob wants to make you an offer that you may or may not be able to refuse.
When I joined this committee a couple of years ago, we did have a presentation for your department. And one of the outcomes was an invitation to our chair to come and speak at one of your training sessions. And because, you know, we're sort of the professional, you're the professional customer service guy. We're the kind of the professional riders. And she enjoyed it. But it never happened again. So I was wondering, would you at least entertain the idea of perhaps inviting representatives from the RAC to occasionally come to some of your training sessions?
Absolutely.
So your employees could hear the perspective of a rider. Well, I'm asking again. If it's not, I'm asking again, and I'm asking if it's not possible. We, for instance, when they have the emergency evacuation drills on a quarterly basis, we're invited to them, and that is certainly more of a hazardous, higher liability environment than coming to a training session. So anyway, I would really like a yay. If we get a nay, I'd like to have an explanation why it would be a nay. That's all.
Well, I'm not going to say nay.
Yeah. Think about it.
Absolutely.
Take it back to headquarters.
We'll definitely entertain that. And that more than likely would be, it's actually a great idea, but more than likely it probably would take place with regard to one of our station manager refresher courses. Our station manager refresher course is a 2-day course. It covers pretty much everything that I mentioned with regards to customer service, leading into procedures and reports, the kiosk station familiarization again, being outside of the kiosk, during peak periods, incidents and emergencies, and overall developing people skills on another level. So absolutely, we'll definitely converse in training and get back to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you all.
Certainly echo everybody around the table in appreciating your enthusiasm.
Thank you.
And hoping that you can infect everyone else with a similar level of it. Okay. Do any of the members of the public who are attending want to make a comment? All right, then. It's easy enough. For the RAC members sitting around the table, there are minutes in your meeting packet. Does anybody have any suggested changes, any corrections, anything for those before we vote on them? Yes, Deborah.
Yeah, just a minor one on pages, where it talks about conversation with Lynn Bowersox, and it talks about she showed us the report that was issued by the Office of Customer Research. I'd like to have the date that report was issued put in here.
Okay.
Thanks.
Any other comments on the minutes?
Motion to approve.
Do we have a second? Excellent. So, all in favor of approving the minutes as written with the addition of the date that the customer service report was written? Any opposition to approving the minutes? Excellent. All right. Okay. Then I will move next to a discussion which I'm sure will be absolutely positively exhilarating about the bylaws. I know that you all have been anxiously waiting this. Hopefully everybody has had a chance to take a look at the amended bylaws that have come around via email. If you haven't, I will say, and it's for voting purposes, the changes tend to fall into three buckets. It's a very official term. The first is changing the elections so that we are not holding elections in January when a third of us at least have just become members and are meeting each other for the first time and yet somehow expected to choose who among us is going to be a leader, but moving the elections to a later point in the year. At the moment, the amended bylaws say July. It doesn't have to be July. We can discuss exactly what date that should be, but regardless, changing the election date to somewhere in the middle of terms instead of day one. The second change of note is changing the attendance policy. As written in the bylaws, somebody is effectively off of the rack if they miss two-thirds of the meetings within a 12-month period. It takes a while to get to a 12-month period to determine whether or not you are indeed a viable, active member of the rack, and it would be more valuable, I think, and I'll see what y'all think, to shorten that period to 6 months so that if somebody misses two-thirds of the meetings within 6 months, we have a pretty solid idea that there are perhaps other representatives of their jurisdiction who could be more involved and who could be representing them. So it's changing that from you have 12 months to determine that your attendance leaves something to be desired to changing it to 6 months. And then the third bucket is everything else. Most of the other changes are relatively minor. One example I threw out last time was that the word bylaws appears twice in the title, bylaws of the RAC bylaws. So changing things like that, and a handful of other very small, administrative clerical changes that occur throughout. So I'm hoping that those won't be an issue, but I'm more than happy to talk about any of them if anybody wants to.
Yeah, right now or later?
Later. Now.
Now?
The intention is to take a vote tonight.
Tonight? Oh.
The intention is absolutely to take a vote, and as a matter of course, the bylaws also say what needs to be done in order to change them. And it does require a two-thirds vote of all RAC members, regardless of whether or not those RAC members are present at the meeting. There are currently 18 RAC members. Two-thirds? I see the counting happening. Two-thirds of 18 is 12. So we'll see if we can be unanimous, and Dexter, Clarence, Richard, Sitsa, Will, and Yvette will hopefully abide by whatever it is that the two-thirds of us vote should we decide unanimously to make these changes. Much appreciated. Otherwise, this is going to be a kind of a fruitless discussion. I don't believe there is any such item in the bylaws, nor am I aware that any of the members have expressed any opinions about it in advance, but so we wouldn't know how they'd vote.
Okay.
Sawyer? Sure.
No, to jump into the first tranche, bucket, whatever you want to call it, I am in favor of moving the election date. I would not suggest we do it in July, given the first Wednesday in July falls around the 4th of July, and most people take vacation and may need to call in, which might not be ideal for an election. So I would suggest either moving it to June, probably June over August. Just want to throw that out there.
I had a point of clarification on that. Why are we – I understand that we don't – we want to have election when the members are here and they've known the leader, like whoever the prospective leaders, leadership candidates are. But why can't we, instead of changing the election time, why can't we change the recruitment time so that that matches election? Like, why is it that we're changing? Especially because we already had election like 6 months ago, you know? So it's like, we still have, that's like half a term left. So I'm just curious why that. And the second part was also in the third bucket about changing the name of the committee. I didn't suggest that my committee name be changed. Someone changed it, and I decided I don't like that committee change name. So change it back or change it to Strategic Initiatives and Partnerships, one or the other. So please don't change the committee name. I like PPP. Keep it the same. I like the strategic, I don't like strategic planning, but strategic initiatives and partnerships I thought aligned more closely to what we actually are trying to do. So that would be great, but if not, then PPP would be good too because it keeps, it's consistent with the historical, yeah, I think it's important to do that. So.
Okay.
So yeah.
Do you want to go next, or do you want me to answer the timing question?
Oh, I was going to respond to the timing question, but
then
please.
Go for it. You put your name tag
sure.
up as he was saying.
So, yeah, I mean, it seems to me that the logical justification for the timing change is to allow new members to learn, grow, and understand the RAC and one another before being thrown immediately into elections.
Yeah, I understand that. That's why I acknowledge that point. But why can't the new members, you know, enter in in January, or no, not January, in July, and then we keep the elections in January. You know, like, you could change both, or one or the either, but I'm wondering why are we choosing to select to change elections versus the things that are more controllable, which would be, I would think, the when we get to, you know, get new recruits, like to, you know, we could say this July is when we're going to have, especially because we have vacancies, I believe, like, why can't we say this July, instead of having elections, because we just had elections, why can't we fill those vacancies with new members and then keep the January, you know, election period? That way it's less disruptive, I think. I mean, either one is not really disruptive, but, you know, I don't really care which way we go, but it just seemed kind of, I was just thinking about it. I was like, wait, why can't we just, it's not, we have vacancies.
The reasoning that I'm thinking of, anyway, is that elections are one date, and the vacancies occur throughout the year. We have very little control over the 21 members and when they join or when they resign. We have people join throughout the year. Rebecca's a recent addition, not a January 1st addition. So that is on much more of a rolling basis, just by virtue of there being 21 people with lives who can or cannot always stay on the rack the entire time.
Yeah, but how does that address? Yeah, I don't understand, because it doesn't. Like, that's regardless, I was about to say irrespective, regardless, which is wrong, but regardless of that fact, it seems like that doesn't really, so it doesn't matter when you select the recruits, so then why don't we change that to, instead of January, just do it in July? Like, why don't we do that? Especially because we have vacancies, guys.
Oh.
And gals.
The appointments are done by the board.
Yeah, so why can't we ask the board?
What?
Yeah, so why can't we ask that? Because aren't we going to, wait, doesn't this require board approval? It doesn't require board approval, that what we're doing currently?
Our bylaws do need to be approved by
the
board.
So then, that's a moot point then, right? Like, we're already asking the board to change something, so.
I think there's more also, because in certain jurisdictions, there are political individuals that are used to recruit new members. So, for example, in D.C., I was told that you had to get a referral from your county, from your ward member.
Because I thought that was against the bylaws, like that no electoral or any.
Well,
one
they don't
party,
appoint you, but yeah, they can nominate you. Then so, okay. And I don't know. Maybe the folks from Virginia can have some more descriptive information, because I understood that there was some interview process that went through. So one reason is, it's easy to change things among ourselves, and it's hard to make other people change. That was really the point. Pat?
Yeah, one thing I can give you, an AAC perspective.
Okay.
We have the same issues that you do with respect to votes. What we do is we do recruitment in the spring. We get new members that come on July 1st, beginning of the fiscal year. We don't hold elections in July. We don't hold elections in August because there's too much travel. You really don't get enough people.
Yeah.
We have historically held elections in September, but I am more of a fan of moving that date to October. Mm-hmm. In September, we got clobbered by the Jewish holidays. We have a significant amount of members who cannot participate in September, and for them not to be able to vote, I think is bad. I think December, January probably is not a good time because you've got weather issues, you've got holiday issues. So that is the way that the AAC does it. With new people being seated in July, they get 2-3 months to figure out who they think would make good officers. And I think we're doing something like in the past September, as I said, but I think we'd be smarter to move ours to October. And maybe the RAC could do the same thing.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, because especially since we're already, you know, trying to, like, we're different advisory committees, but we're councils, but we're trying to like, work with one another, especially with the Youth Advisory Council also, finding out their recruitment, like, cadence and aligning with that.
Deb?
Makes sense.
Just
see if I can circle the wagons here. We've got Catherine and a lot of people are saying, hey, if people come in December, we vote in January, they're not being able to make a participatory vote based on their knowledge of the people being nominated. Joe's making the point that that doesn't really happen, though. We've got people coming and going all the time. So, for instance, if we were to have decided that June would have been our month, she would have been brand new and not known anybody either. Yeah. My experience in the RAC, this last December was very unusual that we had so many new people all at one time. I've really seen people coming every month, leaving every month. If we could identify a trend of what month seems to be the biggest, you know, that might be the better month to choose than to just choose, 2 months down the road or 6 months down the road. Obviously, we've all concurred July, August, not good time because of travel and whatnot. We also know this last time, it was February or something, I can't remember, and I was sick, and if I hadn't showed up, we wouldn't have had enough people to vote Lorraine in because of the, you know what I'm saying? So I don't know if we can definitively define a date that would be the right date to do it, other than establishing a trend when we see the most exodus happening and then making something 2 months after that. So, you know, what Joe's saying is very valid, what Pat's saying is valid, and what Catherine's saying is valid. I think the bottom line is there's not one date that's just going to be the super great date, other than maybe January is not the best. So, you know, what we have to do is, do we want to leave it January or do we want to change it? And I think that based on what everything I've just heard here, we've ruled out several months for other reasons, and it looks like we're looking at March or April, maybe, is what it seems like. I don't know.
And I know in terms of, like, the staggered, like, the terms are supposed to be staggered, like a third, and they're not, and that's perfectly fine. I think maybe was that struck from the bylaws?
No.
That would be interesting.
At the time the RAC was set up, that was the plan, and that's why, but
yeah.
And it was a good plan, but it just, they've never staggered the way they were supposed to.
Well,
what
happens with the vacancies, sometimes that staggering doesn't work out, and that's what happens here.
Yeah.
We have so many vacancies from last year that have to be filled out, that it turned out that we had way too many people coming in, new people coming in.
But, like, I appreciate, like, even Deborah's suggestion of looking at the data, like, and to drive our decision-making, and also, like, just to see, hey, like, why are there so many vacancies? Why are these people leaving?
I agree with your suggestion that we should do appointments twice a year as opposed to just once at a year.
Okay, I don't know if I said that, but I agree. That's an interesting idea.
Well, one thing... I'm an analyst by trade. We will not be able to analyze this and come up with
anything,
okay?
We
need to kind of move on. I think the goal was to see if we could get these approved tonight. And so I think the goal is just we've weeded out the worst. Let's keep what we think would be better than nothing and go for it. Because, if we sat down and analyzed it, we would never come up with a succinct answer.
But then what's the current date then?
Well, Rebecca, why don't you jump in?
New members were uninformed and didn't feel prepared to vote, or is it because people who were running for positions weren't able to communicate why they wanted to be in a position of leadership? Because maybe we just keep it and if people don't, maybe they can abstain. Like maybe I can abstain if their vote comes up and then 3 months later when the next vote or whatever. I mean, is there a real problem with people like voting for leadership that doesn't produce? I mean, I don't know.
We have a strong chance.
I'm kind of exhausted.
Okay.
I guess the question is there really a burden? Is that a problem?
I personally think that I don't know enough of
it. It proved to be a challenge this year, given that
but that was unique.
Of this January, we had something like half the board was new, so a whole bunch of people were sitting around and didn't even know if they should run for something, given that they weren't really sure what the positions were. They not only didn't know each other to vote in, but they weren't sure what they were voting people into.
I definitely agree with that. Like, the fact that we should have maybe 3 months or some amount of time so that we could familiarize ourselves with the bylaws, with one another, so that we can have enough of a foundation of knowledge to vote. Yeah, like, it should just be like...
You shift the date of when you guys vote for your committee, which, to some extent, we did this time, because we did not go straight into voting, right? I mean,
But then that you know, but that's the thing. Like, if we don't have enough, familiarity, or if people don't step up to be candidates for these positions, that's exactly what we did this past election. We like postponed the election. I don't know if we can do that again. Even I don't think last time that was according to the bylaws.
Could I make a motion that we maybe choose April as the date, because we've said these don't work. Here's what we're left. Maybe I'd like to move that maybe we choose April as the date for...
I'm fine with that amendment.
I'll second that friendly amendment.
Okay. Yes, so switching the elections to April instead of January.
I would suggest more March, because in April, generally speaking, you have Easter in there. And
although Easter usually doesn't affect Wednesday meetings.
No.
And Easter's not always
but
in
travel, there's a lot of, you know, they take their spring breaks.
Colin? Did you have, I'm looking at the vertical.
Oh, I'm sorry. I will reiterate my second of Deb's motion.
Okay. Taking note of that, now I'm not entirely sure what the procedure is.
We'll vote on it if someone has to make it. We're supposed to debate it.
Yeah, so this is an approval not of the bylaws themselves, but of that change. Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
Then is there general acceptance? All in favor of changing?
Point of clarification: it's changing from January to April, right?
Correct.
Yes.
So April. So the elections will be next April.
Yes.
That's April the only next. That's the only April. But that's such a long time. Okay.
Yes, because I don't know how to go back in time yet.
Yeah.
So
I do. I'll do it later.
Okay. All in favor of changing the date under consideration to April instead of January?
Aye.
All opposed to April? Anyone abstaining? We're just voting on considering April. Changing the consideration. So
fine. We could always change the proposal again. So I agree. Okay, fine.
Yes. So Nick, you had a comment. So the only change right now is that instead of considering whether we are voting on changing them to September, the voting date to September, we have switched it to April.
Yeah.
We have not yet voted on whether we are going to do that. We're just now considering April instead of September.
Sounds good to me.
Like 3 months to get it perfect.
Okay, from January.
Right.
So Nick.
Yeah, I'm on board with that. I was just gonna say I'm unclear why we're making this that big of a deal. I mean, everybody who was voted on unanimously. I mean, I was one of those people who was here for the very first time voting on people, and yeah, it was kind of weird and uncomfortable. So I'm all for moving it. But again, I don't understand why we need to beat this up as much as we are. I mean, it's July, it's April. Either way, it's not January. Everybody got elected, was unanimous. I don't think it's a big deal for re-elections or anything like that. So I think we just adopt this for the sake of, you know, productivity and getting things done. We could talk about this all night, and then we're going to push it off the next month if it's not unanimous. So I think it's time to make a decision and just
I agree with that. Although I do think that it's important for these deliberations to happen only because it is a bylaws change and it will affect like future like policy and whatever. So I do agree that we should have that time, obviously. But it was such an arbitrary, like for me, I was like, why are we even changing? Okay, so anyways.
Sawyer?
I agree with Nick. I just want for, in reflection with Rebecca's question about, you know, she wasn't here, so could she abstain? Personally reflecting on my election to the Safety and Security Committee chair, it was my first RAC. I feel like I came out very strong, that I had a preparedness background. But the thing was, is I also went uncontested. And I think if we were to move it, it would actually turn into hopefully more contested positions, so you're forced to have a position and a plan for your committee, kind of a more of a platform. Because right now it's very haphazard. And so not only will people get more time to know each other, but I know I came into this position and learned very quickly things were not going to happen as quickly as I was hoping they would. So there's a lot of learnings, and the learning curve is kind of steep. So just reflecting on my own experience, I think it would have been better for me to have been elected maybe in April than January. So.
Okay. Do we have a motion to vote on bucket number one, which is apparently the most contested, and the possibility of changing the election date to April?
So moved.
Second. All right, all in favor of changing the date of elections to April so that the next election will be in April of 2018?
So, I mean, I would love to know if there are other, aside from the PPP, if there are other changes that are contested. Because if not, then I would, you know, love to just like entertain a motion on the PPP and then move everything as a package. I didn't make a motion to that effect. I'm just, that's my just open discussion here.
I think that that's a great idea, except for maybe one other. So one package on the PPP, one package on the vacant, I mean, on the number of absences. I think we need to go vote on that. And then everything else, administrative, everything else into the third, and then we're done.
So I'm actually proposing that, you know, we to discuss those things and make any amendments as we see fit, but vote on the entire thing as a omnibus, if you will.
Omnibank.
Sawyer, you want to?
Just on items that I thought might be of interest, I think you might have emailed out about vice chairs of committees. I know right now that we had, at least on my committee, we have a note taker, essentially, and that's not solidified in the bylaws. I think it's just like a cultural thing, and it's very helpful for the chair, even though we don't publish the verbatim, almost verbatim minutes that Richard takes. They're nice to have. So I was wondering if we're comfortable with continuing to have kind of that as a cultural aspect and not a formal aspect, whether it be note taker or vice chair. I would assume vice chair could do the role of note taker. I need a better name for that. But I just was wondering if we should make that formal or if we should just continue to just have that like a cultural thing.
Yeah, and when I emailed that regarding like vice chairs of committees, like for to expand like the leadership opportunities or whatever, like having a secretary also, I know this is maybe too many like positions or whatever, but I don't think they're, you know, I think it's completely fair and fine. Like we could even leave some of these positions vacant if no one wants to be a vice chair or secretary, but I don't see a harm in, you know, formalizing it or giving like members like more responsibilities or roles, like more of a input into that process. So if anything, I would recommend vice chair so that it's harmonized with the overall RAF council, like chair, vice chair, if we we could also have vice chairs within our committee. And, you know, people might have birthdays or things that they do. That's the reason why we have vice chairs.
I'm going to argue that we all have birthdays.
Yes, that is that we're doing.
Whether we want to admit them is separate.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what you guys think of that, but I think vice chairs is.
Yes, we'll add that as a requirement to be a member of the REC. You must have a birthday. Valerie?
Thank you. I think I would prefer the more cultural aspect rather than a formal role, because I think that you can still develop the experience, Joseph, that we were talking about, and develop your love of that particular area or have opportunities. And since we're, moving the date for election, you can say, hey, I took the notes. You know, I know exactly what this group's doing. So I think we are a relatively small group that has small groups and, underneath us. Let's keep it as simple as possible, because I think, though there's no harm in necessarily not filling every position, I think if you have a lot of unfilled positions, it makes you seem like you're sloppy. You know, it's another cultural message about maintenance. So I would prefer that we keep things as simple as possible.
Yeah, I was just throwing out that idea.
Lorraine?
Whereas I really do agree with Joe's suggestion of having of the vice chair or, something similar to that, just by virtue of sometimes you have business travel that you cannot come to the meetings or what have you. Sometimes it's an issue of you're ill or whatever. Somebody else that can take over the committee meeting so that there are no, that point I do agree, but there's an issue also of sizes of the committees, because that is easier when you have a committee that has 6 or 7 people as members, as opposed to when you have a committee that has 3 or 4 people. So that's the what we have to balance. So whereas I can see your point, and I really do like your idea, as opposed to, not canceling or whatever, not necessarily canceling, but then, at the last minute having to do a conference call or trying, between 2 people or something like that, I also have to think of the issue of size. There are some committees that would work, but it wouldn't work in all of the other committees.
Colin?
Yeah, I this is coming from a former student government nerd. I don't think it's a bad idea, but I think it might be a little overly bureaucratic.
Okay. I didn't mean superbly bureaucratic. I just think in terms of continuation of leadership and just more leadership opportunities, but also I think there is an assumption, which I think could be a safe assumption, where, no one would run for these positions or no one would volunteer, is basically it, because I don't know if people actually want to be vice chairs or any leadership position. I mean, just in terms of being willing to take on, additional responsibilities, that's something that, I was just tossing out there as a mainly what Lorraine was talking about of just
and
having
Nick,
someone take over. But Nick, I think.
Nick?
So I know I'm kind of new here, but my understanding is the spirit of the RAC is to really a group of people to come together to make the metro system, improved and as good as it can be. I really don't see how, debating names of committees and formalizing committee appointments and names and titles, I really don't see how that, helps focus towards the spirit of this committee. So, I mean, if there's no seriously strong objections to it, I mean, I honestly don't see how our time is being best utilized to help work towards the spirit of this committee.
I mean, I recognize your point, definitely, which is why we should stop soon. But all I'm saying is, no, really, I agree with you. But if there is a space, I'm going to take advantage of the space, because this is one of the few times in the year where we get to think intentionally and strategically about our mission, who we are as a RAC, the governance, because all of this does, in my opinion, my humble opinion, it does matter, because you know, like, who the leadership is. Like, they not necessarily drive the agenda, but there are, you know, responsibilities, roles that things have to get done also. And so this is one of those things where if you can spend a little time investing your people into getting things done, that would make things over the long term more. I know in the short term, it's not very, especially waffling back and forth, which is why I voted. But I do think we should stop soon because we've belabored the point. I get your point, but I do think it's important that we do talk about
this. Yeah, and I get that too. I mean, I think everybody's here for the right reasons. You know, if Colin comes to me and says, hey, Nick, I'm going to be out of town. Can you run the meeting for me next week? I'm not going to say, no, I'm not the vice chair. I'm not going to do it. You know, I mean, that's why I just...
That was not my... Just to be clear, that was not my intention in terms of proposing this. My intention was formality could be a good thing. Like, it could, you know, give people responsibilities that they could be held accountable for. So I think, especially because we're talking about accountability, we're talking about changing election dates and all this, I thought, and especially the, you know, 2/3 of 6 months and you're out kind of thing, I thought having more members accountable in positions was also a valid point. So my whole real point was like the accountability piece, which I didn't really share out loud. But.
Yeah. I recognize your intentions are always good. Appreciate your hard work. In the spirit of garnering the support of my colleague across the table, I move that we strike the change to the Program Projects and Planning Committee.
Okay. All in favor of not, we're not voting on the change, we're just voting on the change itself, which, okay, that's weirdly worded.
I didn't even change it, so it's like just leaving it alone.
Yes.
All
in favor of leaving
was.
The PPP committee's name alone as we do our further voting.
Yeah, no need to change it.
Okay.
Thanks.
Now, at the risk of opening up a little bit of a hornet's nest, are there concerns with changing the attendance policy so that we have a six-month window for determining that somebody has attendance challenges as opposed to a 12-month window?
The only thing, I don't have an objection to that. I just want to clarify for folks that in the bylaws says, here's our guideline. But
yes.
In the bylaws, it also says that upon reflection, in other words, if somebody was in a car accident and they missed 2 months, the leadership could say, we can make an exception here. So it's a rule that would get into place, but there are ways to logically decide if that rule is effective on a case-by-case basis. Right. So case-by-case, so it wouldn't just shut somebody out who maybe is a very valid contributor and had extenuating circumstances. The bylaws allow for a case-by-case review. So if we went with the 2/3 of 6 months, which it seems like everybody's on board with that, I just wanted to make sure everybody was aware there are case-by-case situations that can be considered.
It's not hard and fast.
Right.
Yeah. Bob. Yeah, just I want to clarify. So that it's basically missing meeting 4 months, 4 months out of 6 months, right?
Four out of six.
And so that's initiated when we start counting when the person has the first absence.
Yes. And to be thorough, the entire statement says failing to attend regular meetings for 3 consecutive months or missing 2/3 of regular meetings within any 6-month period.
So 3 in a row or 4 out of 6, right? Yeah. And I believe we still have to vote somebody. It's not an administrative action trigger.
Yes.
We still have to vote somebody off.
Yes, and it is still a 2/3 vote after that. So.
Yeah. So
It's not an immediate.
Yeah. So I think the answer is there are plenty of protections. And I think it happens so rarely, and usually when somebody has been absent seriously, continuously, a conversation with them usually takes care of the problem.
Clears it up one way or the other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Then, hearing that one is not particularly contentious, I am wondering if we could have a motion to approve basically everything else in the bylaws. So that would be keeping the PPP name as is. That would be changing the changing it to a six-month period for the missing of the two-thirds of the meetings. That would be not including vice chairs, and that would be adjusting all of the little streamlined typographical clerical things that are throughout the document. Yes, that one we're good with. So that's changing. The question is whether everything else will change.
I just have a question because there was an issue on the one, I don't remember which one it was, but the one that it said that basically how you address the group with the quorum and what have you, and that was put in there. We put it in because we had more than one occasion where members of the public got too, let's just say, boisterous. but, you know, the language, colorful language, et cetera, and one of the occasions we actually had to get Metro Police in here to get this person out. So that is why that was put in there. So that, you know, there was a procedure to deal with that situation. It hasn't happened in some time, and I'm glad it hasn't happened, but seems to me that just in case, that's why it was put in there.
I think
this is a paragraph that says, RAC members and citizens are expected to conduct themselves in a respectful and courteous manner. That part is staying. So, just so you know your expectations, the part that we have struck says, at any time, should a RAC member or a citizen fail to adhere to this expectation, the chair will ask the offending person to leave the meeting until that individual regains personal control. Should decorum fail to be restored, the chair will recess the meeting until such a time as a genuine commitment to respect and courtesy is observed. My thinking with that was that that probably didn't need to be in the bylaws. That could be practice, standard practice, when such a boisterous individual joined us, but that it probably doesn't need to be specifically laid out in the bylaws. We can just address that.
I haven't read that other. Robert's Rules of Orders is included in our bylaws as a standard, mm-hmm. and within Robert's mm-hmm. Rules, we have that ability to do what we're talking about. So
yes.
I think it's redundant, mm-hmm. and it's very subjective the way it's worded right now.
Yes.
So I think if we leave Robert's Rules in there as our rule of conduct, we can utilize that in the cases where Lorraine's concerned about. Because I think Robert's Rules is a little bit more delineated.
And we don't really want to get into a situation where we're policing content, you know, First Amendment and all that.
Can I make a motion?
To approve everything else?
Yes.
You may certainly make such a motion, and I'm happy to have it seconded. Yes?
Because this is a sort of the major thing that we're doing, I'm setting it to the board of directors, I'd like to start Joy to indicate, assuming this is going to pass.
Votes one by one?
Well, we just did it. We indicated who's voted yes and who's voted no. And also because we have a four.
Are you asking for a roll call vote?
Names of the people that voted yes. Well, it was unanimous. It was unanimous, so that simplified matters. So given the relative simplicity of a unanimous vote, should there be a unanimous vote, we've we've had a motion and a second to approve everything else in the bylaws, to use shorthand there. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposition? Any abstentions? Okay.
Woohoo!
Bylaws changed, and hopefully that'll be about as administrative as we ever are. Okay. Hopefully the next few meetings will be a little more content-focused and a little less about our procedures. I know that's not why anybody joined the REC. As exciting as Robert's rules are. A chair's report will be generally relatively brief and will mostly involve an admission of my own mistake, which was not realizing that the board meetings are not always held at the same time every month, which came as a surprise to me. Every board meeting I'd attended so far occurred at 11 o'clock in the morning, so I plan to attend this one at 11 o'clock in the morning, and much to my surprise, it occurred earlier than that, so at 11 o'clock the board meeting was over. It was kind of a frustrating day for me. That said, at the last official board meeting, the board approved the final budget and schedule changes, so those are all taking effect later this month. That was the major change. It was a lively meeting, as they all are anymore. So if you ever are bored and are really looking for some entertainment, I highly recommend coming to the full WMATA board meetings. There's some strong opinions that tend to get expressed there. And for yet another month, we have left with ourselves with very little time to talk about any of the individual committees. Do any of the committees have a 60-second update on how freaking fabulous they were over the course of the last month? Sawyer.
We sent follow-up questions to WMATA staff via Joy, which we'll be revising based on answers we actually received tonight from some of those questions, so that's great. Last meeting, we discussed submitting a quarterly written outreach/analysis/concerns that would be formally submitted from the Safety and Security Subcommittee to the board's respective subcommittees. So formalizing the communication one way, this will be analyzing trends, if we had any concerns that we saw in news clippings, and then this will open up the door that if they're interested in any of that, two-way communication. So that was decided. It's going to be quarterly, so it's not a huge lift, but I'm putting together a template for that. It'll be an all committee kind of participation, and really looking forward to even having that position. Then we'll be able to look back over the course of the quarters and see how the positioning of the subcommittee has changed or has stayed the same if we're beating the same drum. And then we're also going to be updating the blurb on the RAC website about the committee because it's forthcoming, I think, right now. So we'll vote on it at the next meeting. That's all.
Thank you very much. And a P3 committee update, I see.
Yeah, so really quickly, P3, or PPP, the column with GGW, the final draft is in circulation currently. So if you have any objections, please let us know by Friday. If not, it's going to go straight to GGW. They'll make edits. They'll send the final version back to us. We'll circulate that again for your review, and then it'll finally get posted sometime in the month of June. Second, Metro Retro is something that we have pictures of different outlets throughout the subway, just so that riders can have a more seamless, you could read it in the article that I sent around, basically so that they could charge their phones because they die, and then they can't order their Uber, or they can't find their loved one that's meeting them there, or whatever. So I think that's a very simple thing. LA has it, New York is having it, so we should have it too. The third one is recognition, trying to connect riders and, not drivers, but station managers, just finding more ways. I talked to Paul afterwards, the GM, I should say, and he encouraged that. And so ways that we could think about that as a group together, that'd be great. And thank you, Paul, for the GW thing. So.
Anything else that anybody would like to bring up before the meeting is over?
So likewise, customer service will also be submitting follow-up questions with submissions based on tonight. Anyone who would like to attend attend our next meeting, which will be not this Thursday, but next Thursday. We'll be focusing on developing some concrete recommendations for improving in-service communications.
And Joy, do we have a meeting with board matter, or sorry, words apparently are failing me. Do we have a lunch meeting tomorrow with some of the board leadership?
Yes. Do you not attend?
With the Maryland?
Yes.
Okay.
Maryland, yes.
So all Maryland representatives who are here, and frankly anybody who is not a Maryland person but feels strongly, preferably in the positive direction, about Maryland. Let us know if you would like to come and attend the lunch.
Yeah, let me know when I have to get on the council. So I came down 3 days.
And the time is 12:30, Joy?
Yes, sir. It will probably kick off at 12:45. I suggest anybody just meet you at 12:30.
Good, thank you.
Thank you. Once I